We're having such a good time that we decided to do this half naked.
Oh, yeah.
It's fun.
What kind of underwear are you wearing?
None.
Nice. Right now, I'm wearing a Jawser sizer.
Yeah, you have a pacifier. It's like an adult bro pacifier, dude. When you have kids, are you going to give them one of those instead of a pacifier?
Yeah,
fitness influencers I see online that are telling me broccoli's going to kill you and your boxers are going to not let you have kids. Which is true, by the way. Your boxers will kill your kids. Maybe that's not a funny joke. Maybe you didn't like that one. If you didn't, BrentPella.com/shows for tour dates, okay? Because I haven't shown?
I don't think it's shown.
Can I just say shown, though? Is that okay?
You can say it,
are you going to correct me with
fine.
The past present tense of shine? What are we doing here?
Self-critical.
You know? I'm going to say shown if I want. Are you trying to just learn how to be funny for the next hour?
I'm trying to sort
is that
this
what
out.
This is? This is a secret masterclass? Well, we didn't discuss payment at the beginning.
You can suck on my necklace dildo.
Do we see? Jacked comedy with Aaron Alexander. By the end, you'll get 6 minutes of jokes and six-pack abs.
Welcome back to Lyme Podcast. This is a place that we bring together the world's leading experts in all things health and wellness to help you optimize your mind, body, and movement. Today's conversation is with my good friend, Brent Pella. Brent is a professional comedian. He is a satirist. He is freaking hilarious, especially in the realm of political discourse and things of the like. And this conversation is all about how we can start to integrate humor or comedy into our lives to, one, just have a better time, to be able to utilize humor to communicate hard things, also even getting into the integration and processing of some of the hard things that we all hold within ourselves. This conversation was really great. By the end of it, you'll have a better sense on how to actually craft humor or comedy or even a bit for yourself if that was of interest. And if not, it's still just always hilarious getting to connect with Brent. Appreciate you guys subscribing so you get each week's episodes. Thank you for leaving your reviews wherever you're listening to this. I read all of those. I appreciate it. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for doing you. Let's get to it with my guy, Brent Pella.
Motherfucking podcast. Here we
Motherfucking
are.
Podcast.
Motherfucking podcast.
Brent, I've really enjoyed getting to bro out with you last while.
Yeah, dude, we're having a good time. We're having such a good time that we decided to do this half naked.
Oh, yeah.
It's fun.
What kind of underwear are you wearing?
None.
Nice.
Camera can't pick it up, but...
That feels good.
I'm full nude, baby.
How do you teach a person, a civilian, funny?
How do you teach someone funny?
Yeah. Is it possible? Is it a viable thing
to do? No. Well, first off, you charge them. You don't just teach for free.
I understand.
So you have to first discuss Venmo, Zelle, PayPal, whatever the quickest
Amex, whatever you got.
Yeah. Delivery mechanism is for their United States dollars and or cryptocurrency to become yours.
Crypto. Yeah.
Once that's settled.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I, whenever somebody asks me about like, how do I be funny or like, how do you like show somebody funny? I think first you got to think about what you find funny. What do you find funny? Because comedy and humor is so subjective. Mm. Everybody finds something funny that somebody else doesn't think is funny. So the general sense of what is funny can be kind of like filtered down into what you think is funny first and then follow that. So if you find a lot of humor in puns, like I know some people that just love puns, right?
Smart enough for it. I wish I was. I don't have like that like enigma rain.
I don't have a pun brain.
Can't do it.
Yeah. But some people love puns. Some people love just straight dry sarcasm. British people, you know, that's a big British thing.
Yeah.
Some people love slapstick silliness. So if that's what you love, then maybe try to integrate more of that style of humor into what you put out into the world. And maybe you'll find that you're a little bit funny.
If a person was wanting to experiment with putting together a bit, like that was something I did for a very short time, the lasted a span of maybe 5 days. I would wake up in the morning, I would write stand-up comedy.
Would you really?
Yeah.
This week?
No. I did this maybe 2 years ago or so.
Oh, cool. Okay.
I was in the habit of like, I'd wake up and I'd like walk around and I'd tell myself jokes and just like make fun of myself.
Yeah. Awesome.
Like parody. Like
yeah.
Right now I'm wearing a fucking Jawser sizer.
Yeah. You have a pacifier. It's like an adult bro pacifier, dude. Yeah. When you have kids, are you going to give them one of those instead of a pacifier?
Yeah.
Baby is just going to have a jaw like Stonehenge.
Jawline.
Yeah.
That'd be a big deal. Yeah. But I went through a brief phase of that and I enjoyed it. I don't think it was actually funny. But it was like in preparation, but at some point that would be my greatest fear would be to actually like get up on stage and do stand up.
Yeah.
Be absolutely terrifying. I think it's like one of the most courageous things a person could possibly do.
Mm-hmm.
Public speaking is not that bad because public speaking, people can just nod and listen. And right. There's no clear indication of whether it was successful or not. And at the end, people will be like, oh yeah, it was great.
Yeah and there's no contingency upon laughter for it to be successful.
Whereas
yeah.
with comedy, it's very binary. You either slayed, murdered all the terms, mm-hmm. or you flailed. And if people don't laugh, you flailed. And it was probably a really like devastating blow to your, you know, ego and self-identity and stuff. How would you coach a person if they wanted to create a bit, they wanted to wake up in the morning and just like create some type of funny commentary about their life?
Uh-huh.
What would be like the masterclass on cultivating
a bit? Oh man,
that's
a great question. I don't think I am, first off, the one to teach the masterclass. I'm still very much a student, but let's pretend for the sake of this thought experiment
How do we take an idea?
Yeah. So, first choose a topic, right? I think the most brilliant comedy always comes from personal experience. So there's plenty of brilliant comedy that can come from observation. Like Seinfeld is the observational comedy master, right? Seinfeld can look at a toaster and give you 5 minutes of funny material about, using a toaster. A toaster is ubiquitous to modern life. Everybody knows what a toaster is. Everybody knows how to use it. But what have you been through that's personal to you? What have you been through that's an experience or a story that you have that nobody else really has? Because then it's interesting. Then it's like when you share that, somebody's interest might be piqued more so than the toaster or some everyday item or everyday store. I went to the store the other day, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. No, what have you done? You are chewing on a fucking piece of plastic all day.
A little dildo device around my neck.
Yeah. So boom. So now we have like something that's very unique to you, right? We have like a fun like workout dildo.
Yeah.
And it's a sex toy for your mouth. Yeah, and you get to talk about how silly it is and how dumb you look.
So stupid.
While you chew on it.
Everything we do is so stupid.
Yeah. And it's funny. And what's funny about that is a couple things to me, at least. One, I don't use that.
Yeah.
And I up until like a couple of months ago, didn't even know something like that existed. Yeah. Right. So if I were to see you talking about that at an open mic or a show, I'd be like, what the fuck? What?
Yeah.
That's a thing? So right there, you have my interest. And you have to get somebody's interest before you can make them laugh. You have to get them interested in what you're talking about, right? This is purely my own theory. Comedy is so subjective. Everybody has a different approach. Preface, blah, blah, blah. But that is what I would say is like, what is something in your life that is maybe more unique to you than it is to other people? And start there and then
start with a kernel of something that probably evokes like emotion. There's something that's like,
yeah,
like personal to you in this case, because if it's personal to you, then it might be personal to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd imagine that because I'm thinking of this as like, because probably very few people actually would have the courage or interest in actually doing stand-up comedy, but in the realm of like sales or being able to go out on a date with somebody and feeling confident and being able to evoke conversation that's actually stimulating, interesting and surprising and mm-hmm. like keeps you engaged. I'm interrupting you.
No,
starting off with something that actually creates, like evokes emotion, perhaps would probably be a good
starting point. Yeah, that evokes emotion specifically, like interest,
yeah.
right? Or like some level of excitement. Like, yeah. So, you know, talking about working out or whatever is personal to you is going to get everybody that works out a little bit more invested in what you're saying. Something else, you know, if you're trying to just be like generally funnier in everyday life, you got to be willing to like fail at it. You know, you gotta be willing to not for some shit to not work. If you're out on a date and you're trying to, and you want to really be funny and you want to impress this person with your sense of humor, you have to be willing to like kind of fuck up every once in a while and just like go for it. There's, you know, the, clowning, like the original form of not the clown with the red nose and the white face paint and the hair, like original clowning, which comes from France, I'm pretty sure. Sacha Baron Cohen
yeah.
studied at a clowning school in France. I almost went there a couple of years ago. They have a really cool program. And one of the many core philosophies of clowning is that the funny doesn't come from the joke or the punchline that you deliver on stage. The funny in regards to clowning comes from the moment where a joke fails mm-hmm. and the audience witnesses the vulnerability and failure of the clown.
Right.
And I did a clowning workshop a couple of years ago, and it was crazy because, you would go up on stage and try to be funny. And like the workshop, the exercise was one at a time, everybody would go up on stage and just try to make everybody laugh. And that was the goal. Go up on stage, try to make, don't do stand up, but just try to make everybody laugh. Mm. And so one at a time, each person would go up on stage and be like, oh my God, do I have a piece of ash in my butt? Do I? And then like that, so that reaction that you have right now, you're not laughing. Mm-mm. So then I would be like, ah, shit.
Okay.
And pivot, see, and pivot. Then you just laugh.
Pivot.
See? Right. And that exact moment, what literally just happened right now, yeah, is part of the fundamental, like, core philosophy of clowning. And I always thought that's really interesting. It's something I think about a lot too, because there's something really funny in like embracing the failure of a moment, mm-hmm, you know, and having the awareness to be like, ah, that sucked. that didn't land. Mm-hmm. And I do a lot of that on stage now too. If I'm working out a new joke or something and it's not working at all,
yep,
I'll own up to it and try to make the failure into something funny. So I think, you know, people, who really want to integrate more humor into their, life or into who they are as a person, should also kind of embrace like the failure of being funny every once in a while, because there's humor in that too.
Right. Yeah. And that's, I think that feels like by embracing that, you almost are exposing your own humanity,
yeah,
in that moment, as opposed to wearing the mask. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it seems like it's like a slow withdrawing of the masks as you go through those different layers of vulnerability.
Yeah.
And if you're willing to put yourself out there and attempt something that could, like, I'm offering this gesture of hoping that it evokes a sensation or emotion in you. It's a very vulnerable thing to,
yeah,
do. In some ways, it's kind of like a bid for connection.
Yes.
Which is like a really beautiful thing.
It is.
And if it's, that's a beautiful way to kind of like become maybe more like anti-fragile in a way.
Yeah.
If you're able to go to a place of like, oh, a failure actually is an opportunity.
Yes. Yeah. And it loosens you up, I think. And it just widens your capacity to be funny. Yeah. Is to have the willingness to fail.
Mm.
Yeah.
All right. So fine. So what would be the next thing if we were doing masterclass, or you were doing a masterclass on creating a bit?
Which are you trying to just learn how to be funny?
Yeah,
for the next hour.
I'm trying to sort
is that
this
what
out.
This is? This, yeah, is a secret masterclass. Well, we didn't discuss payment at the beginning, so well, I think we'll need to discuss
it. We'll figure it out.
That's okay. I look really fucking good.
You can
camera.
Suck on my necklace dildo.
Do we see? You can suck on my meteorite. This is a meteorite. Did you know?
That's an offering.
All right. The other thing. In the how to be funny masterclass.
Oh, you're series. Scratching your head. I'm putting you in the spot.
I know. No, now I'm thinking. Like, now, oh, I'm like, shit, do I need to develop a curriculum? Do I need a fucking rubric?
Bro, I think it's a good idea, man. People need it. I think it's the most powerful weapon in conversation. If you can get, yeah, a person to laugh and to, yeah, smile, particularly if a person's super serious, like it's legitimate medicine. A person's, mm-hmm, all wound up and tight, and they're very stuck in who they think they are, which we're all that in different iterations of that. To be able to present the offering of just like sending a couple little chinks into that armor,
mm-hmm,
I think it's just such a cool thing. Like, it's legit medicine. It's,
yes,
like shamanic.
It's 100% medicine. I am a shaman. What I think
you are,
in a way,
yeah, you're a master of ceremonies.
I think I treat every show as a ceremony. I really do. I have a pre-ceremony flow that I do before I go on stage. I have a post-ceremony practice when I, yeah, get off stage. It's a whole thing.
Yeah. Have a wank, pop a couple zins.
So that's the pre and the post. Yeah, that's it. ketamine spray right up the nose. Yeah. Yeah. I think a really easy tool that everybody here. Okay. Let me answer with this. So what I've been studying a lot more of lately is, the archetype of the court jester,
right? Yeah.
And how the court jester, carries a certain level of cynicism with him at all times, a certain level of, you know, reflecting the opposite of what's happening, mm-hmm, in society or in the kingdom or whatever. And doesn't succumb and give in to the winning ideology of the space that he occupies. Instead, he offers like a reverse perspective of it.
Yeah. What if we think the opposite?
Right.
Yeah.
And I think people could use more of that. I think a lot of people are missing, you know, a shred of the court jester in their everyday life. I have probably too much of it. But you know, a lot of people,
why too much?
Well, I don't have too much, but I just am like very much every time I see a news headline, my thought process is immediately like, I think the opposite of that. How can I reverse this? You know,
I'm so easily dupable in that way.
Sure.
It's like whatever you tell me to do, I like the reverse psychology would be so simple with me.
Yeah.
I'm such a simple, like, it's like not complicated.
So I think like more people could use elements of inspiration taken from the court jester archetype. And one of those elements that I think is a really easy mechanism to create comedy is sarcasm. And sarcasm is very, very strong. It's a tool that we can use to break down big ideas or mock prevailing ideas. Like me and my buddy are sarcastic with each other all the time, just in everyday conversation, like about silly, stupid shit. Like I'll give you an example. I don't know. He's got raw meat in the freeze. He's got steak in the fridge. And I ask him, hey, can I cook up a steak for dinner? And he's like, yeah, but make sure you cook it extra well done so that there's no red and it looks like char. Maybe this is a bad example, but like that's just a quick example of like clearly he's being sarcastic and dumb.
Yeah,
it's not meant to get a big laugh,
yeah,
but it's just a funny just injection of quick sarcastic humor. Yeah. Into our conversation. I do a lot of sarcasm in my videos. There's a ton of sarcasm sprinkled throughout all my videos. And so, you know, you're talking about what are the ways people can learn funny or like integrate more humor into their everyday life. Try to find things to just be sarcastic about, because being sarcastic, I think allows us to take shit less seriously. Mm-hmm. And you know, the prevailing thought of the day is everybody takes stuff way too seriously all the time. That's how we found ourselves stuck with half the country hating the other half. And I don't know, does that answer your question?
I want to keep on digging into the thing, but I think, yeah, I think that the humor part and the sarcasm and all that stuff is very interesting, because I think it's one, it shows a really high level of intelligence, you know, because I think it's very easy to some degree to be able to take things at face value,
yeah,
and just be able to regurgitate like, okay, I read this, now this is what it is, or be able to see things as they are. But to have that muscle to be able to see things as they are and then bend them slightly, mm-hmm, in such a way that kind of evokes emotion or evokes response, I think it's just such a cool muscle to be able to cultivate.
Yeah.
You know, and so I just wonder, I would like to, if it's possible, to attempt to unravel and unpack, like, take away tools for a person to be able to start to implement that. Just like if you were teaching somebody, like, how to train, like, do fitness stuff.
Yeah.
There'd be certain principles that you could follow, like finding neutrality in the blah, 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 or right, pressure in the blah, blah, blah.
Right, right.
You know, so yeah, that's kind of what I'm going to make an effort at unpacking and unwinding.
I'm going to do my best to unpack,
do your
bro.
Fucking best,
I'm
going to
do my fucking best,
do your fucking dude. Best, bro. So taking a situation, is there any, what would be another like exercise a person potentially could explore? And it's okay if this is something that's like,
no, this is cool.
I'm challenging you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. Another exercise that somebody could explore. I'll tell you an exercise that I do.
I'm gonna rip this off and actually do a comedy class. I'm gonna sell all my program after this.
Just so you know,
you're actually
jacked going, comedy you're with actually Aaron Alexander. Yeah. By the end, you'll get 6 minutes of jokes and six pack abs.
Some R&D right now.
Yeah. Yeah. One exercise I do that might not be for everybody is I'll set my timer for 15 minutes and I'll write nonstop. I'll just write about anything, any topic. I'll write about growing up with a single mom and all the things that I remember about that. I'll write about my healthy diet and my diet habits these days. And that'll take me to somewhere about like all the fitness influencers I see online that are telling me broccoli's going to kill you and your yep. boxers are going to not let you have kids. And yep. you know, all the hysteria around all these little things in fitness and health, which is true, by the way, your boxers will kill your kids.
Yeah. Tap water's definitely making you gay.
100%.
Yeah.
But I'll just like free write all that shit. And then I'll look back at it and I'll read through it. And there might be like one sentence out of every 8 to 10 sentences that has some kernel of funny or makes me smile a little bit. And then I'll bring that to a show and I'll like kind of improvise based on that sentence or based on a couple of sentences. And I'll slowly start to structure a joke. So that's one exercise I do. I think that's a fun way of just encouraging stream of consciousness.
What would you find in that that would be a seed of a joke?
So the single mom one is a good example because years ago I got a bit out of that. I was doing a free write about how I was raised by a single mom and how she raised me on like Fleetwood Mac. And I was just writing like, I grew up with Fleetwood Mac. So all my friends were into Jordan sneakers and I was really into scarves. Right. And then from there I was like, yeah, I had like this, the Air Stevie Nicks one was like silk linen and cotton and blah, blah, blah. And then, all my friends were listening to 50 Cent and my favorite gangster rapper, cause my mom didn't let me listen to anything with the parental advisory sticker on it, was Will Smith. So they'd be on one side of the locker room, like the candy shop. And I'd be on the other side, like, na, 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 getting jiggy with it. Na, na, na.
Still good.
It's okay. Still I don't really do it anymore. It was an early joke. This was like within the first 2 years of doing stand-up.
Yeah.
But I got a joke out of it. And yeah, that joke lasted me a couple years. And it was fun to do on stage. And people related to it. But again, it was something very specific to me. Nobody else was listening to Will Smith while their friends were listening to 50 Cent on the other side of the lockers before JV basketball practice, right? Yeah. So that came from like the free writing exercise. Other things that I do is I skim headlines all the time, daily. I try to stay really up to date on what's happening and what's trending so that in the micro I can see moments of news headlines that are trending, but then in the macro, I can step back every few days or few weeks and be like, what bigger cultural trend is happening right now that all these micro things start to emerge as a pattern for?
Yeah.
So during COVID, it was like hysteria left and right, just people hating each other for wearing a mask or not wearing a mask,
so
and
crazy,
all that shit. And then like today, there's a lot of pattern today in the fitness world is biohacking. There's some new biohacking thing every day. You know, you're sucking on whatever the fuck that is and walking around with some toe thong things between your toes. So like there's new things that I can like pull and pick apart. And so that's how the recent video I put out came to be, the biohackers on a first date.
Oh yeah, that's good.
Because it's like, what would it be like if people just were, if that's all they talked about? So yeah, skimming headlines, knowing what's going on and trying to find a pattern of behavior in culture that can emerge as like a trend that is mocked, that can be mocked.
It seems like something that I see with comedians that's the funniest that I experience is a comedian that's willing to say things that you wouldn't expect for them to be willing to say about themselves or point out about themselves. Like,
yeah,
it seems like vulnerability is like a really big component to that. And if a person can normalize something that would typically be something like, oh, I don't want to talk about that guy's haircut or the fact that they're overweight or the fact that they're flamboyant, whatever, or some kind of, you know, something that's like, ooh, like, I'm not really sure if I want to say that, to be courageous and willing enough to just be out with it and put light on it, as opposed to it being, because typically the operating system that I have and most people have is, how do I hide the things that I don't want you to see? And how do I show you the things that I do want you to see?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like comedians are almost like the exact inverse of that.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Is there something to that?
There is. I think stand-up comedians,
which is very therapeutic.
It's very therapeutic.
You do that with a therapist as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like with a therapist, you kind of remove the veil of, yeah, of what's the word? Self. What's the word? Self is, it starts with an I.
I don't know.
I don't know. You remove the veil of being like maybe embarrassed about yourself or self-conscious. You remove the veil of being self-conscious.
Where does the I come from?
I don't know. Maybe the I in conscious. That's what it was. I was thinking about the I in conscious.
Remove the third
eye. That's how I think of, yeah, right. Yeah, but I think a lot of stand-up comedians you know, to but also to do stand-up comedy, you have to have a level of not giving a fuck. And I was told that very early on, and it really stuck with me. And it helped me develop a level of confidence on stage that's kind of a necessity if you're going to be on stage holding a microphone, expecting hundreds of people to be quiet while looking at you, talking. You have to, you got to kind of have a level of not giving a fuck. And that level, there's probably a better way of phrasing it, but that's how it was presented to me 8 years ago. So that's how I communicate it now. There's that, that lack of giving a fuck allows for topics to come about and topics to be touched on that other people give too much of a fuck about, you know, that other people are a little too tightly wound about, whether it's, you know, how you personally look or what this subsection of society is stupid for, or, you know, whatever it may be. That's so in an attempt to unpack how to integrate more humor into your life, there is a level of not giving a shit and really like losing that sense of self-consciousness that is needed in order to really go to like, in order to really express something as a joke or really like try to make someone laugh. And that goes back to, you know, being willing to fail, like I said before.
That's something that in the time experience for me hanging around comedians or being in like a green room of certain places and whatnot, where it's like high level comedians around, it's very kind of, you feel very naked in a way, or I feel very naked in a way, in the sense of like, it's very hard to hide anything because they're all like I don't know, some kind of dog that smells really, hound dogs or whatever. They're like, they're like wolves. For any place where there's any level of pretense or any level of like you're fronting in such a way, which is so damn therapeutic. Like the sooner that you can be around that type of environment, like something for me, I've spent like a good chunk of my life kind of like thrusting my chest out and kind of like strutting around and like engaging my lats. And it's all just, I'm just insecure. You know, I'm like seeking validation through physicality and I don't want people to know how fucking whatever I actually feel internally, which I'm, you know, working through all that stuff. And all in all, I'm coming into a decently integrated place, but all of that is protection. That's so easy to see. And if you can be around a group of people that's able to just see that and not destroy you for it, but be able to poke, like draw it out, shine light on it in a therapeutic, caring fashion, which I think is something I really appreciate about the crowd work that you do with people. Like, it seems like you have this deep level of care for people that you're making fun of, and you don't want to alienate them. You want to actually bring them in to the crowd, into the group, while also, and by, and in doing that, you're kind of pointing out these things that perhaps they might not even be consciously aware that they're doing to kind of like protect themselves.
Yeah, dude, 100%.
Is that a thing?
It is. It is a thing. My, and, you know, the crowd work that I love crowd work. Crowd work is super fun. Some people are amazing at it in like a darker way, and they're like a dagger every time they do crowd work. They're actively trying to pick someone apart and like ruin them, it seems like. I want everybody to party. I want everybody to leave happier than they were when they came in. So I made it, I made a conscious decision years ago that whenever I was going to mess with somebody in the crowd, I was going to do it in a way that didn't isolate them from everybody else, but instead allowed them to laugh at themselves along with everybody else.
We're actually bringing you into a more authentic version of yourself in a compassionate way.
And
we're laughing about it.
So,
I'm too fucking spiritual, bro.
It's good, dude.
I need
to. It's good. I'm the one wearing a fucking meteorite, you know?
It's too much.
You're okay.
Well, that's true. Yeah, you're right.
It's, it, crowd work is, but that also goes, that's in line with my personal philosophy toward comedy too. And just like, I'm not, and who I am as a person, like I'm not, I'm, I don't think I'm a really mean person. Like I'm, I don't. I'm not like mean. I don't,
want try people not to be to mean feel bad. To
people. Yeah, I don't want people to feel bad. I want everybody to be happy and in love with each other and go have sex with each other. It'd be great.
Just want to watch.
Just want to watch.
Top of my
I just want to be there.
Yeah.
Just, I'll be in the corner.
Yeah, whatever.
The way that comedians can puncture through any kind of front that somebody is putting on, whether mm-hmm. they're in the audience or in the green room or hanging out at the bar or whatever.
Or themselves.
Or themselves, yeah. It's therapeutic and it's a...
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's something that I would love to see more of just from everyday people in life. Mm-hmm. And because it speaks to a level of awareness that the comedian has, for, themselves, the person they're talking to, just awareness, just, if you show up with chest out, lats back, dick forward, whatever, I'm going to be aware that, oh, this fucking guy is like peacocking for some reason.
And peacock energy.
I'll call it out in like a fun way and be like, hey, bro, why are you hard? This is a green room. and so there's a level of awareness that leads to the joke or leads to the punchline or leads to the crowd work. And that type of awareness is something I just think more people should have, could have, maybe not should, but could have, because having awareness, having a heightened sense of awareness for your sense of self, who you are, what you look like, will allow you to, I think, just be more openly engaged with the world, a little bit less, have less of a front to put on, you know?
You become more yourself.
Yeah, you become more yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a better, you have a more confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the awareness, level of awareness, I think, is directly correlated to level of confidence.
Mm.
And I think, and that's why a lot of comedians without that give a fuckness. They don't give as much of a fuck as other people do. So that raises their confidence and their awareness comes up at the same time. That raises their confidence. The two kind of go hand in hand.
Well, it's almost like a form of exposure therapy where your deepest fear is to be cast out from the tribe and people finding out how, whatever, insecure you are, or worthless you are, or like whatever your story about yourself is.
Mm-hmm.
And so as long as you're holding that inside, it's just this baggage that you hold.
Yeah.
And you're just going to walk around with this subtle contraction that's probably going to lead to some form of disease or, you know, manifestation of something that's uncomfortable in your life. It's going to mess with your relationships. It's going to make people not trust you because you're ultimately inauthentic, because you're ultimately hiding something. It's very hard to detect what someone is hiding. You know, all we know is you're hiding something.
Yeah.
And so the more that you can start to have the exposure therapy of kind of like unfurling those layers within yourself of parts that you're actually afraid to look at and shine light on, the more liberated and more like self-expressed and, you know, the more yourself that you can become.
Mm-hmm. The happier you'll be.
And happier you'll be.
Yeah.
Because you're finally just like, this is it.
Yeah.
You know, the jester, I think, is an interesting thing, because the court jester is able to, he has license. He's one of the only individuals that has license to be able to poke fun at the king, you know, and be able to, like, they can say anything, which is incredibly therapeutic for the, you know, the tribe or the community or the group, because we need to be able to say the things. If we live in a culture where there's just some things that we can't talk about, ultimately, I think that will lead to some form of disease.
Mm-hmm.
And so the jester, the court jester, or the clown, or the what's the Native American
term? The heyoka.
Heyoka.
I've been learning about that one. That one's cool.
Yeah, the heyoka.
Yeah.
All of that. It's clown. Actually like a very therapeutic, medicinal archetype that is mandatory for the culture. And without that, then we're not going to have a way to purge and diffuse the shit that we're kind of like all pent up about.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I want to be able to cultivate that more. Like, what's the, all right, so we got the something that's a motive. Something else that I think is a probably a relevant thing is like element of surprise.
Yeah.
So if you're not, because like once you see the bit, it's dead.
Yeah, like it's not like
you can't
music
see it again with, because with you music, lost the surprise.
Yeah, with music, there isn't really an element of surprise. Maybe the first time you hear a song and you hear the drop that you weren't expecting.
Yeah.
But then you can listen to that over and over and over again.
Yeah.
With comedy, yeah, it goes from a 10 to a 2. Once you've heard a joke, you know what's coming.
Yeah.
So there is an element of surprise to it, and the element of surprise is that's where comedy really thrives, man. That's the punchline, right? The premise is almost predictable. You know, cold plunge. I do this joke about a cold plunge, where I say, "Cold plunge changed my life. First time I ever did it, it was so cold that when I got out," so that's the premise, right? Cold plunge changed my life. It's so cold.
Yeah.
When I got out of the cold plunge, my penis was so far inside my body, I had to change my pronouns.
Nice.
And so that's like you don't know where it's going until boom, the punchline happens, right? Yeah. And that maybe that's not a funny joke. Maybe you didn't like that one. If you didn't, BrentPella.com/shows for tour dates. Okay. But that's like,
it's a different experience than breaking it down like step by step.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're doing a fucking comedy workshop here, so nothing's going to be funny.
Yeah, right.
But the principle of surprise is crucial, because if you're writing something predictable, it's not going to hit. It's not interesting. It's just like you're talking.
Yeah.
It's like conversational. You're talking the whole time.
Yeah.
Cold plunge is so cold, man. It changed my life. When I got out, I was freezing.
Yeah.
What?
I like that one.
Yeah, I mean, that's some Andy. That's like Andy Andy Kaufman.
I'm a simple person. Yeah.
Yeah. So somebody could be like super meta and just write a set that isn't funny and it's anti-comedy, and that's a whole thing too.
Andy Kaufman is so good. I go back. I go back to watching his comedy bits or skits or whatever, probably annually or so. At some point, like I'll have like a draw to look up an Andy Kaufman thing. It's like, it's really great because you don't know who he is.
Right. You have no idea.
You have no idea.
You have no idea.
It's very interesting.
Yeah.
In that way.
He's super cool. I need to study him more. But he's great. All of his stuff was like so weird and like intentional in a weird, like he didn't even want people to laugh. He just wanted you to feel uncomfortable, and then that's where the laugh
just
came from.
It's clowning. The sensation of
it's very similar to clowning.
Yeah,
like his goal wasn't like in big silly punchlines. It was like to make you feel discomfort sometimes, and that
just
would yield a laugh. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So the elements of comedy, I think, are timing and surprise. When it comes to stand-up comedy specifically. Timing, surprise, and I really like vocabulary as like a third pillar of these things. And somebody I think that always used fantastic vocabulary is Dane Cook. Mm. Dane Cook always used weird ass words, like silly words. Or Louis C.K. uses weird words, like words that you don't expect to be in the vernacular of a joke.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if I can think of a good example of that, but like...
Is Louis C.K., is he coming back? Is he going to make a comeback?
He's on tour, selling out.
I love him.
Everywhere. He's hilarious.
He's so good.
Fantastic.
Probably one of my favorite comedians.
Easily. Yeah. But like, so those three pillars, right? So element of surprise, lead them down a direction, take a quick right turn for the punchline and down in a way that nobody could see coming, right? Timing. The space between words matters. It matters just as much as the space between notes in a song matter. If you go that was a really good drop. I'm a DJ on the side. That's a really good drop. But if it was like it's weird. Same with a joke. If you're delivering a joke and your delivery is off by like milliseconds, if the wording is off by milliseconds, it's not going to have the same impact. So your timing really has to be on as well. And then vocabulary, if you can use, I really like interesting words just taught, like sprinkled in to jokes. I'm trying to think of a good example. that Dane Cook does, you know, if you're talking about driving a car around or, and, just like like there's, there are funny words, like the word barn is a funny word.
Right.
It's way funnier than like house or some like colloquial it's familiar word. It
probably comes back to like surprise.
Yeah, it exactly. And so that ties into the element of surprise.
Every little bit of something that adds a little bit of surprise, it kind of like tickles your fucking neurons. It tickles your hormones in a way.
Yeah. Like, you're like, oh, that's silly. Yeah. Yeah. And it's fun and it keeps you engaged and interested. And and so I try to do that so that the vocabulary I'm using is just another tool to keep people on the ship that I'm driving down, you know.
How often do you use comedy to bypass how you're actually feeling?
Probably too often. Probably too often.
Is that how it started for you?
No, maybe. How often do I use comedy to bypass how I'm actually feeling?
I do it a lot.
It's a good question.
I do it all the time.
Probably a lot, but I do try to speak honestly in friendships and relationships and with family. I really put in like conscious effort to not be silly during moments of serious conversation or at least to be intentional and
or you have the enough self-awareness to be able to check yourself and observe.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that was a defense joke.
Yes. 100%.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a good little like radar of sorts of like, oh, interesting. I'm in territory that I feel like I need to defend. There's actually something here.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just so beautiful.
Yeah. It's, you know, I am beautiful. I think I'm very good.
I'm very attracted to you, bro.
And that makes sense. I mean, that's why we're shirtless right now.
Yeah, bro. So I can't stop looking at my fucking physique in the camera over here.
You guys getting that? Ooh, is that too much silly? Ooh, am I hiding how I actually feel with comedy? Ooh.
I wonder if a person can, most comedians probably have fucked up childhoods, I would imagine.
A lot. I don't know about most.
I'd imagine a lot of them probably wanted to make one of their parents happy.
Yeah, for sure.
There's very often like enmeshment with like, I need to make somebody in my house smile. I would think that would be a very common trend.
Yes, I would think so too. I haven't done enough research to come to a conclusion on the specific statistic, but I mean, I grew up with a single mom. My dad kind of wasn't really around starting in junior high, high school.
Yeah.
So, you know, if this was a therapy session, we'd probably land on that as being a big catalyst for why I decided to become a performer and an entertainer.
This is research and development for my upcoming program and a therapy session.
That's great. Like we're helping each other.
Double stack.
Yeah. But yeah, I think I would wonder if the same could be said for super successful entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it mostly people whose careers are based on seeking attention? Is it mostly that, or could it be said about anybody that's wildly successful? I guess talking it out right now, I would probably land on the former rather than the latter because of the attention seeking element and not receiving that from a certain family member or parent. Yeah.
Yeah. To have the validation.
Yeah. The validation.
Now I have a whole, you know, group of 300 people, all direct attention at me, laughing, you know, validating that I am whatever, XYZ. Yeah.
And I think we should be a little bit more grateful for deadbeat parents out there, because otherwise we wouldn't have great comedy. You know?
It's true. It's true.
Kinda.
I'm going to take a moment and share about a device that I utilize most days of the week when I'm at my place here in Austin, Texas. That is my Sunlighten Infrared Sauna. I've got it sitting in the backyard beside the cold plunge. I am a huge fan of this because with infrared sauna, you're getting different benefits than that of a traditional Finnish style sauna that's going to be getting hotter. The infrared sauna, you're going to be getting more benefits with collagen repair, collagen synthesis, things of the like. So if you're looking for mitochondrial health, you're looking for tissue repair, you're looking for healthier, more vital appearing skin and more elastic, more well hydrated, the infrared is a really fantastic tool. I really enjoy both traditional sauna and infrared for different reasons. If you're going to get an infrared sauna, I think Sunlighten is the way to go. They have lower EMF output compared to most of the infrared saunas that I am familiar with. And I specifically use the Amplify from Sunlighten. This model I like the best for me because it contains an external heating unit. So there's two external heating panels inside there. So you're getting a blend of the heat that you get from a traditional sauna with the benefits of infrared. So if you have interest in getting yourself a discount up to $600 off, you can go to sunlighten.com. And then when you go to the get pricing form, fill in Align promo code, you'll get up to $600 off of your purchase. I hope you guys enjoy it. I use mine literally almost every day. If I'm here, I'm using it all the time. I think you guys dig it. Sunlighten.com, Align in the get pricing form, and get up to $600 off your purchase.
Do you have any worry about getting too healed and not being funny?
No.
I think that's a thing in comedy. I think we were talking about that last night. Of like fear of like, I don't want to go freaking do ayahuasca or go to Hoffman Institute or something like that because I don't want to come back and be too like equanimous, like too at ease.
Shout out to Equanimous, my buddy, who's a fantastic DJ.
Nice.
I think I have no fear of that. I think that fear is my opinion is that fear is stupid and that fear will only manifest the thing that you're scared of.
Right.
I think there's a weird thing in like Hollywood, like mainstream entertainment, where if you're really overweight, a lot of people tend to be scared of losing weight because they've assumed this position of like the fat friend in a lot of the projects that they're involved with. Yeah. And I know people like that. And it's kind of a fucking bummer.
And the world doesn't want you to change either.
Yeah. Like, and that's a fucking bummer, dude. We've established a real bummer.
Who you are.
Yeah. And that sucks because there are some people that are really overweight that are just genuinely hilarious and awesome and could be great if they weren't overweight too, but they're too hesitant to lose the weight and become physically someone different when emotionally and mentally and performatively they're going to be the same because of the stigma of dropping the character that they are. And that sucks. I don't really know what to do about that. It's not my space to give advice on that. I have no idea. But I would hope that in that specific instance or example, they just do what is healthiest for them and trust that all the love and the success and the opportunities will follow purely because they're a good person. That would be my hope.
How self-critical are comedians as a whole?
Incredibly self-critical. Mm. Incredibly, dude. I have pretty consistent, I'm getting much better at it because I'm doing a lot of work on myself mentally and spiritually and emotionally and physically.
Why do you have a fucking smiley face on your arm?
Do you want to know the story?
Tattoo. Yeah.
Do you want to know that story or do you want me to answer this question?
We'll come back to the smiley face, man.
We'll come back. Okay. Sorry, no, lock just, in the smiley.
As you're flexing, we're going we'll
come all back right. to that. Self-critical. Yeah, dude. I've had battles of like crippling anxiety, dude. Crippling self-doubt, imposter syndrome, toxic comparison to others.
Yeah, too.
You know, and I forget who said this, but it's something that stuck with me recently. It might have been a fucking Hallmark card in the store. I have no idea. It was, if you spend too much time looking over the fence into someone else's garden, then all your flowers in your garden will die. Mm-hmm. Something like that. That was not very poetic as I thought it was going to come out, but it was, you get the metaphor.
Yeah.
And comedians in particular, because they're so, they have this level of cynicism, this deeply rooted and very useful and creative element of cynicism that bleeds into personal cynicism too. And being cynical of your own life and your own creativity and your own output. And that can be toxic as shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I work on that constantly and I'm getting better at it. It's going to be a lifelong journey and with no real end goal in sight. But I'm bettering my abilities of managing those emotions, managing the anxieties and the stresses and the being self-critical by instead trying to twist it into being healthily competitive with myself.
Mm. Like fuel.
Yeah. Yeah. Like using it as fuel instead of weight. Cause sometimes it feels like weight and I'm just, I'll have a project or I'll have like an opportunity that I didn't get or something that somebody else got or somebody else is like popping off and I got to really, reframe the story that I'm telling myself away from, oh, you didn't get that. And that means you're not going to have this thing. And that means 5 years from now, you're not going to achieve this goal. And all the stuff you're doing right now wasn't good enough to get this booking or that project or this money or whatever. And instead be like, okay, well, you're still working on this. This project still has legs. You still believe in this thing. Look at all the people that loved all these things you recently did. Look at all these notes. What makes you excited about your notes for upcoming projects or upcoming like endeavors or things you want to achieve, and try to like just build excitement for the future instead of cynicism for the future.
Mm-hmm. Have you been able to utilize, so kind of started the conversation talking about like the therapeutic effects of the jester, the Heyoka, or being able to shine light on the things and make it, you know, draw out the comedy of that. That seems like a more vulnerable part with you. Have you been able to, based off of what you're sharing, have you been able to kind of do that kind of comedic therapeutic process and draw out the funny and the light within those deeper insecurities? Or are there some things that like the comedy technique just doesn't work on?
That's an interesting question. Cause I haven't shown that comedy light.
I don't think it's shown
toward those. Can I just say shown though? Are you? Yeah, gonna, is that okay?
You can say, yeah.
Are you going to fucking correct me with fine. The past present tense of shine? What are we doing here?
Self-critical. You know. Calm down.
Calm down. I just get super mad at you.
Calm down, bro.
I'm going to say shown if I want.
Just having a conversation, bro.
It's more. This is my life. We're talking about here.
You're right.
We're unpacking a lot.
You're right. I was wrong.
So the smiley face I got, it was I haven't shown that light toward those.
I don't actually know if it's shown or shined.
Well, now we're going to figure it out. Guys, in the comments below.
We need ChatGPT.
You let us know.
Yeah.
I haven't. No, that's more of a personal, that's more like personal work. I think I haven't really like just brought that up in my material or anything like that. It's just been more of a,
it's something that so many people are struggling with.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I think that's like, I would think there's probably a bit in there.
There's kind of a, I've touched on it in some, but like I do this whole ayahuasca story about the first time I did ayahuasca and how we're going around the room talking about all the reasons people are there. And I touch on that a little bit. And if you want to know more, watch my comedy special on YouTube.
Mm.
What
is it called?
Conscious Bro.
Oh. And so what's the network that it's on? What's the YouTube channel?
800 Pound Gorilla is a YouTube channel.
But if you just look up Brent Pella comedy special.
Yeah. But if you type in Brent Pella comedy special, you'll find it, or Brent Pella Conscious Bro. It was fun. It was my first one, you know?
Yeah. Well, that was fantastic. I love that you incorporated all like the effects and whatnot.
Yeah.
It was very cool.
Thanks, man.
Very creative.
Yeah. Thanks. It was really cool. It was the biggest thing I've done. And you know, like any piece of art, I'm already looking back on it. Like I'm like cringing at a lot of moments. Like, oh God, why did I do that?
Whatever. You just keep moving forward.
It's the evolution of the artist. So yeah, but touching on those things has been more of a personal process rather than like trying to take elements of the creative comedy process. And
maybe it's like a stage thing. Like there's some things that aren't funny until there's enough of a callus around it.
Yes.
Like it's not appropriate to just start making fun of like, oh, like your mom died, mm-hmm. you know, like there's light in this. Although you could find something perhaps that could be
I mean,
some silliness. Of,
yeah. Which
that's a cultural thing as well. Like in the culture that we live in, it's not appropriate to joke about death. But if you went to another culture, I don't know, maybe India or something like that, where their relationship to death is kind of more like a graduation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or a celebration.
Yeah, it must have some banging jokes about death.
Suddenly comedy works out really well.
Yeah. And also, I don't think that every dark moment should be picked apart or dissected with comedy.
Yeah, sometimes
right away.
Sometimes,
like I don't really like my, you know, relationship with my dad isn't great, but I don't talk about that in my set. I don't have like material about that.
Yeah.
Maybe one day. I'm not anti.
Yeah.
And some people have been through like really bad, terrible trauma and they do talk about that and they, some people don't. And I'm of the mind that there, that nothing is off limits. I don't think anything should ever be off limits, no matter how dark or twisted or messed up it is. As long as there, the intention is humor and not shock value. I'm not a huge fan of just shock value comedy, you know? But I do think nothing is off limits and there's no such thing as too soon as long as it's delivered properly. There was probably a joke made on September 11, 2001 that was hilarious. And there were probably many that were very, very bad.
It's a very sensitive tightrope to be able to walk. If you're willing to enter into that space, and I think a lot of people probably are afraid in general in their lives. And so they're not wanting to go into the place of the taboo or into the place of where something actually could evoke emotion. I notice I have the tendency of like enjoying reactions from people. And so I'll like dive into really uncomfortable questions. And sometimes I burnt myself in that where I'm like, oh, I think that actually probably made that person uncomfortable. You know, I'll find out afterwards. They're like, oh yeah, like that was probably a little much. Or deep, they were a little
deep
confused.
Deep personal questions?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like they're like a little confused or they weren't expecting it.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. It was just like, oh, like, you know, at first it kind of caught me off guard, but typically more times than not, it has led into a much deeper connection. It's just oftentimes I think people aren't really ready for a deeper, more vulnerable connection.
Well, you like asking those questions. And I really like receiving them. You've asked me a couple of them.
I really enjoy it.
Yeah, you've asked me a few.
Yeah.
And they're always fun. And I am always thrown off guard.
Yeah, what the
fuck? Which is great. I like, but I like being thrown off guard. You asked me a couple days ago, you were like, who do you hate most in the world?
That's a
and I was like,
question.
Bro, we were just talking about alkaline water.
That's a good
what
question.
The fuck? But it was
that's
a great
one
question.
Because you're not question. Supposed to hate people.
Right. What do you think about when you look up at the stars?
I don't know. Usually, probably. I think something I was going to say something small about like some like avoidance strategy I have about like, you know, going back inside, texting some hoes or something like that, or you know, getting just avoiding myself and not being able to look at myself and be still with myself. But usually what comes up with that is like a feeling of feeling very small. It feels like a very therapeutic experience of being like, it's the same thing that I get from like the ocean, particularly if I'm place myself in a situation where I'm surfing and the waves are like suddenly get like more than I was anticipating.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, and just, you're just in like the grasp of this thing that doesn't give a fuck about you. And you're just this little speck and it can destroy you. And it just does not give a shit.
Yeah.
I feel like I get that a little bit from the stars, like a feeling of just feeling very, just like a, you know, like a speck, which is very gratifying sensation. Cause most me, I'm so wrapped up in all of my little like problems and
yeah, you're the center, you're the star of your own story here.
Yeah.
And that gives you a break from being the center of your own story.
Yeah.
Because there's so much more that just doesn't give a fuck about you.
Why do you ask that?
I was just trying to think of a random question to ask you.
Yeah.
And it's also a question I really like to think about too. I just thought of it the other day.
Yeah. Yeah. Or things that like what's like something that makes you feel like, what's your deepest insecurity?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like, oh,
whoa.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, well.
It's like, damn, dude, I thought we were ordering tacos. Hang on a second, sir. Yeah, but two barbacoa. So my deepest insecurity.
Yeah,
no, it's fun. I like that you ask those questions. And I am glad that more people don't, because it would be really fucking annoying. But I'm glad I have a guy who does.
Yeah, it's nice. Just like unpacking the things.
It's fantastic.
I just want to figure it. I want to figure it out.
Dude, we're all trying to figure it out, man. We're all trying to figure it out, dude. Nobody is ever going to figure it out. So many people think they got it figured out and it's just nobody has it figured out. And it's so, I like, fucking love that, dude. I've been thinking about that specifically a lot. I think about it a lot. I've cried about it. Like I've had a really deep, like beautiful cry. When I was in Costa Rica a couple of weeks ago and I was at this thing and there
were doing ayahuasca.
Do you know what ayahuasca is?
Dude, it's so amazing and cliche and like
it is, but it's real.
Wrapped up in one, and then when you're actually in it, you're like, oh, this is real as shit. Okay.
It's real as shit. And I'll tell you this piece. So I was at an ayahuasca retreat, but this has nothing to do with the actual medicine itself. It was during a group workshop, right? Mm-hmm. There's like 15 people that were at this private event for a week. And we all got paired up, and I got this random dude. He's a little bit older. He's from somewhere in the Midwest, I think. I don't know. And he was there solo. And we were one-on-one, and everybody in the room was one-on-one. And we had four questions that we would ask each other. And then we would repeat the four questions. And the questions were something along the lines of, what is a belief or practice that you have that is limiting you or holding you back? And then you would answer that question. And then I would say, and I would hold neutral space the whole time. Mm. I wouldn't nod. I wouldn't be like, I wouldn't smile. I would give you no expression, nothing.
Yeah.
Pure neutral space to allow whatever was coming through you to not be affected by me, mm-hmm. right? So that was the first question. Second question, where does that come from? Third question, how does that make you feel? Fourth question, what is a practice or belief that you could integrate to assist in your growth and you accomplishing, you know, the life you want to have?
Yeah.
And then you would repeat those four questions over and over and over and over and over for 10 minutes straight without stopping.
Deeper layers of it.
Yeah, you get into deeper layers. The person who's answering can answer with different things if they want, or they can keep going. Either way, you went so deep. And so in holding this neutral space for this man, I saw him start. He was like really thinking, and he went really deep with a couple of his answers, and he was really like searching for what these beliefs and practices were, and he was really searching for how they made him feel, and he was really searching for different beliefs or practices that he could integrate instead, and he was really searching for where they came from. And I fucking cried, dude, because I was watching this guy try to figure his shit out in a room of 20 other people just trying to figure their shit out. And it was really beautiful. And because all these people came from all over the world for 1 week, and we had boiled down everybody's life to this one 10-minute moment where everybody in the room is doing such deep fucking soul searching, trying to figure their shit out. Mm-hmm. And so now I walk around with so much more grace for people when they're angry or upset or frustrated or in moments of conflict and in situations, because people are just trying to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
We're all trying to figure it out.
They probably have a great war going on inside.
Like, everybody
does. Be kind. Everyone has a great war going on inside.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the more that a person is buttoned up, oftentimes the more they're trying to protect the chaos of what's going internally.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, like, I think pretty girls have an issue. You know, where they're like, you know, you assume that they must just, everything's perfect, everything's easy, everything's right. Like granted to them. But in fact, they're typically the most self-critical. They're typically, you know, the deepest in the comparison game. And also there's like the, they probably feel like other girls might kind of take them as being threats, you know? So there's like other girls who are like enemies, and then there's all this like sister wound stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's like, the people that you think have it figured out the most oftentimes are experiencing the greatest amount of inner turmoil,
which is very ironic. It's like what's projected outward is so polar opposite from what's happening on the inside.
Yeah. So what came in that experience for you?
Well, just that, man. Like it allowed me to, it encouraged me to move with much more grace and patience for people. And it was also just a very kind of almost like existential experience of really witnessing another human that I had never known and that I would probably never see again. And seeing this person in a state of vulnerability that his wife and kids might have never seen.
Yeah, right.
Just for 10 minutes doing the deepest fucking soul searching possible. And so now, and I love like studying people, I just like naturally kind of do. When I meet somebody or I'm talking to somebody, I can't help but start thinking about what this person was like as a kid, what their character traits are. Like, are they fun? Are they scared? Are they ambitious? Are they, you know, timid? What's the like character trait that stands out for each person? And to be face to face with somebody in such close proximity to them physically, but also on like such a soul level.
Yeah.
it was just profound. It was really profound. Mm. And you know, what I take the most is, like I said, I walked away from that moment just with this new level of grace and patience and love for everybody and knowledge that everybody's trying to figure this shit out.
Mm-hmm.
We all got a finite amount of time in this body and we're all trying to figure out how to do it the best way we can.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are going to miss. A lot of people are going to fuck up. A lot of people are going to mess up. And so having the grace and the patience and love for people, regardless of how badly they're messing up, is only going to add to the collective good that's happening in society.
Like the hack in there as well is the greater amount of compassion that you can extend out to other people. Reciprocally, you're going to be experiencing that with yourself.
Yeah.
And so if a person that's really, and that's something, another thing to know, I think there's some kind of like probably metaphysical law in this. The more critical a person is, the more cunty a person is, the more judgmental a person is, the more like finger pointing the person is, the more they're that's a direct reflection of what of their internal landscape.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's so easy to shit on that person because they're such a pain in the ass. But I would imagine, I think there's some law of this, like psychological law, the more pain that person is experiencing internally. And like the higher path would be to be able to be like, oh, the person that I hate the most actually is the person that probably has the greatest lessons for me and probably could use the most love.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the most healing thing that I could possibly do for myself would be find an avenue of love and compassion for that person.
Yeah.
That draws up this just like gut wrenching sensation within me.
Yep.
Gets hard when someone does some effed up stuff to somebody you care about.
Yes. Yeah. That's tough. And you know, I don't believe in like accepting every mess up with grace, love, and patience for sure. Like if
what do we do with pedophiles?
Man,
this is one of those questions that I'll ask sometimes. It's kind of like I'll ask it like Erwan, someone's hand, like a fucking
in line at the vegan hot food
burrito.
Bar. Were you in line for the hot food bar? No, man, go ahead. Okay, cool, thanks. What would you do with pedophiles? What?
I don't think I'm well.
You know, the pedophile issue, fucking pedophile topic.
It's a big one.
Well, they got to be removed from society, like for sure. That's step one. I don't know enough about the topic to know if there's any possibility for.
Do they deserve compassion?
Well, so that's what I don't know enough about the topic to know if there's any possibility for, what's it called? Not recuperation. What's the word?
I don't know.
For when somebody's in prison, but it's a center. Oh, yeah, rehabilitation.
Yeah, rehab.
I don't know. I truly don't know. I like literally have no idea. Is it a brain chemical thing that this person is just severely fucked up chemically and imbalanced, and even though they know it's wrong, they'll never be right?
Mm.
Well, if that's the case, then they can't be around anybody ever. They got to go to a place and be locked up forever. I'm not a huge fan of the death penalty. I just don't like killing people. Mm. I don't know.
Pretty expensive keeping somebody alive.
It is super expensive. Like I know that's an argument.
You're killing them in another way. Like you're killing their capacity to really engage in society, and you're just tormenting them.
Can we give them any ability to put good into the world and make their life worth it? Mm-hmm. Can that happen? Can they be locked in a place, but like doing something that like creating a good or doing a service that puts good, so that at least they have some type of purpose that they can fulfill that doesn't involve anything terrible, you know? What about that? Then the money spent on keeping them alive isn't wasted and we don't have to kill them. I'm trying to find a way to not kill someone and not waste money on them because they're a piece of shit.
What is it? Well, at least the prisons are getting money. What is the, which is a business, which is really sad thing. What does it mean for a life to be worth it?
For a life to be worth
it.
It being
a worthwhile life.
A worthwhile life to, I don't know. Can I like, We're going trying like, to measure we're going the like good somebody puts into the world. Post-ayahuasca
integration questions here.
Yeah, it's great.
Sorry.
That's okay. What is one belief or practice that you hold that is limiting your... what does it mean for a life to be worthwhile? I think the amount of good that you that can be measured, that you put into the world. If the amount of good is... But I don't know how you would measure that. I don't know, this is a fucking tough question, dude. Maybe there's a really simple answer that somebody will think of. Maybe I'll think of it after this and I'll text you. Mm. But I think the amount of good that you put into the world, the you know, the amount of people that you help or impact in a beneficial way.
Mm. Something
I don't know what the barometer of that would be though. Like I don't know.
I've heard that I like is leaving people better than you. Than you know when you started, like leaving people better than in a better place than you were, like yeah, making sure that every interaction
similar to what I said, yeah,
every interaction that a person has is an opportunity to kind of just like make things a little bit more
yes
open, a little bit more authentic, a little bit more light, a little bit more like healed.
Right. So okay. So here's a thought experiment for your bitch ass: if a pedophile was locked in a rehab facility, not allowed to go into town or be around anybody except for everybody else that's in the rehab facility, no access to computer, internet, or anything like that, right? Yeah. And they're given a job of like, you know, filing crazy amounts of documents, or they're really good at financial planning and they're doing tax work or whatever. They're actively assisting many people, right? Are they putting more good into the world than a person who owns a liquor store and like doesn't have a family?
Yeah, right.
Like who's putting more good into the world?
Yeah.
The person who owns a liquor store and is selling snacks and booze for 30 years?
Yeah.
And like not really, you know, not part of any local clubs, community events, whatever,
our,
you know?
Our socioeconomic situation is very confusing because someone that is... you know, robbing maybe thousands or hundreds of thousands of people of a ton of money in some kind of banking fraud type thing. Mm-hmm. You would look at that person from the outside and be like, wow, they're killing it. Like I look up to that person compared to a person that has like a little taco deli stand or something like that in Guatemala.
Yeah.
You know, that's, but the difference with the people is something that I've experienced in traveling and also working with, you know, like superstar celebrity type people that just have fucking everything.
Mm-hmm.
But internally, there's a lot of stress and angst and like existential, just like stress and turmoil. Mm-hmm. And then something that I've experienced with that is leaving the person, you know, whatever we're, you know, doing body work or training, whatever. And then getting in the car with like the Uber driver, who's just a nobody.
Right.
But they're like, ah, they're having a great day.
Mm-hmm.
They're smiling. They're like, hey, what's up, man? Like, hey, you know, and they're, you know, that day they made $112 sitting on their ass, driving around, just listening to people fucking talk about their problems or ignore them.
Yeah.
And they're like in a place where they're just like, they've got this vibe to them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about the, like that, the internal weight that a person holds that I think that it's just can be terrifying to actually start the process of like unpacking that weight. And sometimes the more a person has, the more stress comes with that. And it's very interesting that some, like very often the person that has the least also has the most of the things that actually matter. And the person that has the most oftentimes has the least of the things that actually matter.
Yeah.
It's fucking confusing, bro.
It is.
And then we're comparing ourselves typically to the person that has the most of the things.
Yeah.
It's very, very confusing.
Yeah. Yeah. It is confusing. It's
say something funny about that.
You know, we're all just trying to figure it out. We're all just trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
I think, okay. So the smiley face.
Yeah.
All right. Can I tell you about the smiley face?
Yeah. Tell me about it.
So, Natalie and I were having a pretty rough couple of weeks last summer, 2023. And it was like three or four weeks in a row where it was just like bad thing after bad thing after bad thing. There was a bad health thing, bad physical health thing. There was a family issue. There was a family dog issues. Always really sad.
Yeah, it's tough.
Work issue, financial issue, another health thing, a car thing. Like it was just bad, 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 bad for like 3 or 4 weeks. So we did what any spiritual person who lives in Austin would do.
Yeah.
Even though we live in Venice.
MDMA.
We did MDMA. We wrote down all of the bad things on a piece of paper and it added up to like 27 things. Wrote them all down one by one, passing the pen back and forth. And then we tore up the paper. We brought it outside. We put it in a flower pot, said a little prayer, set all the scraps on fire. And it all burnt down really slowly. And the edges of the papers were burning down into ash. And the whole bowl was black. And there was just one little paper forming into its final embers, and the whole bowl was black. And then the last edges of the paper collapsed, and from the black ash at the bottom rose three golden embers in the exact shape of the smiley face.
No way.
It's a very specific smiley face. And we both saw it and we're like, what? Oh my God, what? And it was just a really cool kind of wink from the universe is how I took it. It's, you know, there can always be light rising up from the dark.
I love a universal
as we learned
wink.
From the eclipse. Yeah. Yeah.
The, something that we were talking about last night that I think is an interesting thing, kind of getting back to, I don't know, something that can be like learned from the process of standing up in front of a large group of people and attempting to make them laugh, which again, just fucking terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Rapport. So creating rapport with another human being, one of the most important things you could possibly do. We talked about NLP, mirroring, matching, you know, kind of like finding rapport with another person is kind of like tapping into who they are and how they feel in that moment. How would you guide someone on being able to create rapid rapport with another human being?
Eye contact. Eye contact. First and foremost, eye contact. I love eye contact.
Right.
I look away from people when I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And it's something I'm trying to be better at because I really like eye contact. I think you can learn a lot about somebody and connect with them in a much deeper way.
Right.
When you hold eye contact. Body language is crucial. It's so much of a rapport is built without words, first and foremost.
Of course.
So body language, eye contact, how to build a rapport with somebody quickly.
Yeah.
Was the prompt.
Yeah. Yeah, you meet somebody, like first you kind of have to, like the analogy from that last night is like two trains, like locking, you know, like how do you make that happen with efficiency? Cause if you don't, it's probably whatever conversation you're going to do, or you're trying to make them laugh or whatever the thing is, probably going to be a lot harder.
I try consciously to smile when I meet someone for the first time.
Right.
I try to smile like really quick. Even as soon as I get their name, I try to smile.
Right.
I, you know, a lot of people will recognize me at like a music festival or an event or something. And I try to not create fleeting moments of connection. I try to just build a micro rapport almost in the moment. Cause I fucking love people, dude. I want to meet everybody.
Yeah.
People are cool as shit. Mm. I don't get annoyed when people say hi. I think it's cool. It's, it's certainly not natural. It'll always be weird to be like recognized by a stranger.
And they're being very vulnerable. It's kind of like they're telling a joke.
Yeah. And a lot of times it's like, hey, are you, and there's like a hesitancy. And so I greet that hesitancy with like a smile and a handshake and what's your name and where are you from? And oh, cool. And maybe like one or two quick lines back and forth so that there's a connection made. I fucking love connecting with people. It's just fun. It's really cool. Yeah. And that to me is building a rapport immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Can you smile at someone? Can you look them in the eye? Can you shake their hand? Can you find one thing that you both share in common? Can you find a thing? Do they live in the same, have they been to the same city as you? Where are you at? Are you watching a show? Have they listened to this music a lot? Are they wearing something that you can relate to, shoes or a hat or the graphic on their shirt? Is it recognizable? Is there one common thread that you can find within 10 seconds that you can add a smile, eye contact and a handshake to and immediately have like a quick rapport? That's been something that I've kind of embedded in my subconscious that I try to actively put outward whenever I meet someone for the first time.
I think someone just feeling deeply listened to, even, or like seen, even if it's for 5 seconds, is incredibly valuable.
Yeah, it's a connection.
It's like you're actually offering something.
Yeah, we all seek connection just naturally on a primal level. I think people seek connectivity with others.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're creating a rapport, in theory, you don't know the person because there is no rapport, right? And so a rapport to me is just immediate, is just a positive connection. So
yeah,
those are the ways.
You know, did we talk about this? The Ram Dass story, he was talking to his uncle about, and the guy was talking about, or no, it was his dad. And the dad was like, oh, you're charging for these events, you're charging only $18 a ticket or something like that. And he's like, if you charged, you know, $50 a ticket, would you still, same number of people would show up to it? And he's like, yeah, same number of people show up to it. And he's like, well, why are you leaving all this money on the table? He's like, well, for the cost of the event and everything, like it's like a fair amount. It pays for the things. It gets me out there. It gives me like enough to, you know, feed myself and feel good about it and all that stuff. And the dad's response is like, well, what are you doing? Like you ought to be ripping these people off a little bit more. And he didn't say that exactly, but something along those lines. And then Ram Dass's response to it is like, remember when you did, I think his dad's like accountant or something like that. Remember when you like saved Uncle Tom from that accounting situation, you know? And he's like, man, you must have charged him a ton for that. Cause you were like really hooked him up. That was, you know, he was in a tight spot. And he's like, they're like, no, of course I didn't. He's Uncle Tom. Why would I try to gouge Uncle Tom?
Mm-hmm.
And Ram Dass's response is like, when you find me a person that's not Uncle Tom, I'll rip him off.
And
I thought that was a cool thing of being able to extend that thread of I'm not, it's not just me and my like core clique of 5 people,
mm-hmm.
you know, or me and my Uncle Tom, my parents, mm-hmm. or me and my girlfriend or whatever, being able to have the active practice of extending out your perception of what family means to you, I would imagine would probably create a lesser sensation of loneliness.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
for you and for others.
Yeah. Yeah. And having that opportunity to be able to connect with someone, even if it's just for 5 seconds or 10 seconds or a minute or whatever it is, the exercise and opportunity to be able to connect with that person as though they're actually someone that you care about. I think there's something incredibly therapeutic about that.
Yeah. There is, and it's received in a way that's so unexpected,
mm-hmm.
you know, because sometimes, like in the Ram Dass example, you know, all the people he's charging $18 are probably so grateful that they don't have to pay $50.
Yeah,
that makes them even more excited about the opportunity, right?
Yeah.
And in the creating a rapport example that we were just talking about, the people who are like in the micro of the example of me meeting someone for the first time. It's so much more than a fleeting, oh, thanks, man. Hey, nice to meet you.
Yeah.
That would probably give the person maybe exactly what they expected. And they'd walk away being like, okay, cool. Didn't met him.
Yeah.
But instead, there's a connection made. And I would hope my intention would be for the person to walk away like, oh, fuck yeah, that was cool.
You can also, there's an opportunity to steal from that person. Like if they're coming up and they're vulnerably sharing like, I'm a big fan of you. Like you've been really supportive for me, you know, or like whatever. Can we get a picture or something like that? The picture could be maybe annoying sometimes, but you know, depending upon the circumstance and what you're doing. But there's the opportunity in that you might be with a girlfriend or something like that, or out on a date. There'd be the opportunity for you in that
to have a threesome.
To have a threesome with that person.
Yeah.
Which that would be like ultimate familial.
That's the goal. Right. Every time somebody comes up to me to say hello, that is in my mind, like, would I fuck this person?
It definitely flashes by.
Yeah.
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 But there's the there's the other opportunity that on a like a junk food version, like short term, you could kind of be condescending to mm-hmm. that person of like, oh, you're coming up to me and I could kind of look down on you in a way or kind of like take it as a way of like, I'm not going to actually connect with you. I'm going to stay separate. I'm mm-hmm. going to stay quite distant. And kind of reaffirming that like you're down there and I'm here, which might feel good because it'll feed some ego layer for you temporarily.
Yeah.
And then I think eventually it actually just becomes another little like toxic bite
yep.
that you're having.
Yeah.
The alternate would be dropping yourself down or up or whatever, but like meeting that person exactly where they are,
yeah,
seeing them as Uncle Tom. And I think that if you do that with repetition, it becomes a very nourishing thing.
It's super nourishing. It's more fun.
Yeah, you don't want to be
more
like,
fun.
Like the loneliest person is the person
above everybody else.
Above everybody else.
That can't relate.
And then they start having to protect themselves,
right,
because eventually everybody else is going to try to take them down.
Right.
It's fucking terrible.
Yeah.
Fame is so weird.
It's a weird thing. It's a weird thing. It's unnatural. It's super unnatural. It goes against all of our like tribalistic primal origins, you know.
Yeah, it's an odd thing, and that's the thing that we're just this is what like one of the things you said in your comedy bits of just like things are stupid, like everything is so stupid.
Mm-hmm.
This is so dumb. Like all of the little things, the things that we find to be so important are just so dumb.
Yeah.
There's like a core bit of things that are not that dumb that we don't spend that much time thinking about.
Right. Right. Like what? What are some of those things?
Whatever. Threesomes with fans.
Uh-huh.
You know? You know? Like the core stuff.
Yeah.
You know? Whatever. Family.
Yeah.
Call your mom. Call your dad. You know? Like work through shit. Don't hold on to grudges.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you holding on to the fucking toxic weight of that grudge? You know? Or feeling like... just doing like just the basic fundamental free things, like being playful.
Yeah.
Being a silly bitch. Acknowledging like this is a dream. I don't know what the hell I'm doing here. I don't know how I got here. I don't know where I'm going.
Yeah.
Nor do you.
Yeah.
We have no idea.
No idea.
And we're playing this game. There's another Ram Dass bit of like, I'll agree to believe you are who you think you are if you agree to believe I am who I think I am.
That's and fun. That's a Ram Dass bit?
Yeah.
That's
and
a
we're
fun
just
bit.
Running this game.
Yeah. I got to read more Ram Dass.
That's comedy though. Like that's what comedy does. Comedy releases that veil temporarily of who you think you are isn't actually who you are.
Right.
And I'm going to show you.
And I'm going to show you. Yeah. Yeah. Which is good. I think it's just society as a whole needs more veils to be lifted.
Lift that fucking veil, bro.
Yeah, we got to lift that
more shit. MDMA.
More MDMA. Yeah.
All right. You got to go do birthday things.
I do have birthday things.
You got stuff.
What do we get to? Oh, look at that. We did good.
Oh, I don't know. What is it? I think we were, my guesstimation was, this is going to be a 15 minute podcast. I think we're good. What? Hour 15, hour 20.
Yeah. I want that on the thumbnail.
Put that on the thumbnail. I really appreciate you, man.
I appreciate you, dude. You know, if,
how good at basketball am I?
Are you, how good are you?
Yeah. Like one to Kobe. Like where am I at?
One
we
to
just
Kobe.
Played basketball before.
Oh
this.
Man. Oh God. I can't give you a number.
All right.
You are much better than I thought you were going to be. You're much better, you know, because you're like a statue. You're like a Greek statue. Yeah. There's no part of your body.
Very
that's,
small genitals.
Yeah. Right.
That's a part of it.
Uh huh. It yeah, is.
It's a part of being a statue.
You're carved out of fucking stone. It's frustrating to look at you with a shirt off.
I received that.
Your ankles are bigger than my neck. It makes no sense. I don't understand.
Big ankle energy.
I don't understand.
Yeah.
But usually when I see people play that are like bulky and jacked, there's a missing element of coordination because their muscles can only move in jerky motions.
Yeah.
Especially people who haven't played basketball their whole life. Like, you know Terrell Owens, the football player?
Yeah.
So we played in a weekend game for a couple of years in LA, and he's ripped, dude. He's jacked like crazy.
A little pit bull.
Yeah. But he also played throughout his whole life. He played even in college at Chattanooga when he was also playing football. So you and him actually move slightly similar on the basketball court. He's a little more fluid because he played for so long.
Mm.
But it's surprising to see him play because he's got these mechanics that are like not super fluid, but like more fluid than anybody who's that ripped, and he's really good.
Mm.
But then you watch somebody play who's played their entire life, and like I said before, basketball is a game of micro movements. You have to really know the millimeters of the game. If you go in and out and you shuffle step to the left or right, your crossover has to be super quick and fast, and that training, the training of your body's mechanical motion to do all those things takes years and years and years, and you would have better vocabulary than I do to describe it, but you don't suck.
Mm, and the small dong adds
the small
to
dong allows you it allows you to move
fast pivots
I mean I can't keep up because I'm way too weighed down dude. It's like
a lot of dong.
It's crazy. I gotta like tape that shit up and you know do all kinds of stuff.
It's a whole process.
But
have
you're
you,
good
have you ever taped it up? You explored that?
Well, I have to because so it goes down.
Yeah, no, I get that,
you know.
I respect that.
Yeah. No, I never taped it up. I wore a cup when I played baseball when I was little, but it would leak out the edges because my cock is so freaking big.
It's a lot. It's a lot. It's a lot. Lot to deal with. One frame.
I hope everybody has been watching this episode on YouTube and not just listening to it because there's a lot to look at.
A lot going on here. I really appreciate you, man.
I appreciate you, dude. Thanks so much for all you do and all you put into the world.
The comedy special, you just look up Brent Pella.
Brent Pella comedy special on YouTube. Conscious Bro, you type it into YouTube, you'll find it. At Brent Pella on all the other things, and come see a live show.
Where are you playing next?
I got shows coming up in San Francisco, Sacramento, San Jose, California, Birmingham, Alabama, Escondido, California.
Where can people find the lineup?
BrentPella.com.
Dope.
And there's new shows all the time. I'll be in Austin for a bigger show in the fall, New York, Chicago,
cool.
Miami, bunch of places.
Word up.
Yeah.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
Love you, brother.
In. That's it. That's all. I'll see you next week. Bye. Bam.
Hope you guys enjoyed that conversation. I invite you over to the Alliant Podcast YouTube channel. Subscribe over there if you'd like to see the video version of this. This one, we happen to have been shirtless, and it was pretty absurd and ridiculous. So if you're going to look at a video, I would say this is probably one worth checking out. Thank you so much for subscribing. Thank you for doing you. Thanks for views. Thanks for sharing. I'll see you next week.